are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
You can burn a whole thing down. I don't care if you're uncomfortable, we can burn a whole thing down. Couldn't care about an AutoZone, you can burn a whole thing down. Y'all don't really care about a brother till we burn a whole thing down. Yeah, we about to go to work, yeah, we about to let it burn. Like Cyndaquil, yeah, I bet you will. Tried to skip it, they've been lynching us since Emmett Till. And that's really freaking generous, cause honestly, they have been killing us since we were property. No stopping me from saying how it is. This ain't the whiz, ain't no easing down the road where we live. That's the biz, we can't go out for a jog or a swim. Walk a dog, fall asleep in the car, fall asleep where we live. So we bout to let it burn just like Usher say. They be trying but I do not care what Gusher say. Putting black screens up, make a few bucks. My life isn't marketing, yo, who you think you trying to play?
I liked it better when like nerdy was all fun and stuff. This is really angry, like don't you think you said enough?
Well it's freaking tough cause I'm being loud. And the people are not playing with you now. Yeah, you can burn a whole thing down. I don't care if you're uncomfortable, we can burn a whole thing down.
You can burn a whole thing down.
Couldn't care about an AutoZone, you can burn a whole thing down.
Burn it down, down.
Y'all don't really care about a brother till we burn a whole thing down.
Burn it down, 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 down.
Yeah, we about to go to work, yeah, we about to let it burn.
Bro, come on, the youngin's what I'm focused on. I'm so old and golden, I ain't know you was talking about Pokemon. But I'm more like me and nerdy next to a burnt down system with a can full of gas and a handful of matches. I know we ain't miss them. Fame is not my mission. Lanes be so complicit. Watching all the leaders leading, banking on they minions. But we torching up the takers and we giving to survivors. City of liars making black people compliant. Coon Rapids, who are you asking? I'm proof, survive the boom bap trick. Bro, ethics got me laughing at your message. And if Black Lives Matter, you would not get so defensive. We got cops and thieves and robberies and gaslighters. We are not the same, we on the scene, we pass typing. Cause y'all don't care about us, and we ain't come to ask. We just mind our business and then people be so stuck and mad. So pass the gun and mask and pass the ethanol. Y'all can really kill us for anything, y'all just bend the laws. This ain't performance art, this ain't performative. Saving the racist heteronormative. You can burn the whole thing down.
Yeah, you can burn it all down.
I don't care if you're uncomfortable, we can burn the whole thing down. AutoZone, you can burn a whole thing down. Y'all don't really care about a brother till we burn a whole thing down.
Burn it down.
Yeah, we about to go to work, yeah, we about to let it burn.
All right, so welcome to a special episode here from Views from the Ground, Views from the Damn Ground. And what we're going to be doing today is my birthday. So my birthday lands exactly on June 14th. And to celebrate, what we're doing is I've been having a chess birthday party here at KFAI. So we got 11 chessboards set up. We got people playing Blitz over there, and it's been a lot of fun. We got cake. Just want to give a special shout out for the cake too. We have a chess cake that was made by Ashley. So give a special shout out to that, and also to my mentor, D. Henry Williams, over at R&B Healing and Celebration for that. And so we have a special program here planned today. We actually have three African-American chess masters here that, live here in Minnesota. So go ahead and introduce yourselves.
My name is Donald Hooker.
Yeah.
My name is Bert Wilson.
Yeah.
My name is Kyler Weatherspoon. He, him.
All right. So yeah, so we kind of just want to talk, you know, I am not a chess master. I am only a chess expert, which is the title under master. And I use they, them pronouns. But we kind of just want to have like a nice discussion here and talk about what got y'all into chess. So how about you kick it off, Dad, and tell us like what got you into chess?
Well, you know, I was raised in the projects in like back in the 60s. And, you know, there was thousands of people around, all kind of games. So I got into board games. And I started playing chess. I learned how the pieces move, but I really didn't really play anybody too much. And I ended up, you know, getting in high school, and I ran into some chess players who they started playing chess, and I got interested in playing chess, and I decided to go to the library and pick up the encyclopedia and learn how to play chess, how to read books, how to make the moves, and you know, that's how I got my start, just basic setups that I still teach kids today.
All right. And how about you, Bert?
Well, I started elementary school, and this was right after the Fisher boom, so I'm kind of a, people know the expression, Fisher baby. So just right after, you know, Fisher won in 1972, there was a huge explosion of interest in chess in the U.S., and there was a lady who came in, one of the moms came in, she volunteered to teach chess and also run a chess club. Her name's Mrs. Wolfson, and that was just amazing, because then there were chess boards, and I got the first steps learning how to play, and then she would bring in some people that would teach us some basic tactics. And then once the bug was really on, about like fifth or sixth grade, then I started reading books, more and more books. And then as I went further through high school, I just became a voracious reader, and playing in tournaments, playing in elementary school tournaments, and junior high, then high school, college, just is just, I was just rolling, just swimming in chess.
Yes. And Kyler?
For me, it was an after-school program. So it was parent-led, and one of the years they ended us organizing, taking us down to the national tournament. And so we, like, rented a charter bus, and we went down. And for me, it was when I was in middle school, so it was a real big formative experience. So we went down to Nashville. I was with a lot of my friends. And then in that tournament, I ended up getting first in like the unrated beginner section. So it was a real big confidence boost for me. And then I've been playing ever since.
All right. So tell us about some of the first tournaments that you attended, you know. Dad, how about you start it off? Tell us about one of the first chess tournaments you went to, like rated chess tournaments.
Well, you know, the first chess tournaments I was going to was at the community center. And, you know, it was in the neighborhood, so it was just run by African-Americans. It wasn't really rated. We had a ladder. You know, we'd play on the ladder. Who was the best? We played them on the ladder. They would be rated. Some of them would. And eventually, you know, we'd graduate to playing rated chess, playing in the first tournament. So I think my first tournament turned out to be 1342. And after that, you know, I ended up joining the Navy and going to New York, stationed in Brooklyn Navy Yard, played a lot of chess at the Manhattan Chess Club, played a lot of chess at the Marshall Chess Club. Mm-hmm. They even had a chess club in Brooklyn, the Black King Chess Club, or something like that. So, played a lot of chess in New York and in the Navy, as on the Navy team, you know. So
he was on the Navy team?
Well, yeah, I was on the Navy team, and, you know, they pay for you to go different tournaments. So when I was in New York, I would go to tournaments, New York Open, World Open, because that was in the area. So I learned a lot when I was in New York. But mostly I learned everything in Kansas City. You know, from Zeb Fortman, started off Zeb Fortman, Herman Key, Anthony Ross, kind of like a group of African-Americans who just, Seemed like they just caught fire for chess during the Fisher boom. So I didn't learn when I was in elementary, you know. I kind of knew the moves, but didn't have no books, didn't have no chess teachers. But then this guy named Zeb Fortman started coming into the chess clubs, coming into the high school, you know. I've seen players in high school playing, so that's how I got into playing. But then he started coming in coaching and teaching, and he goes on to become one of the best black chess players around. And, you know, really I didn't see no masters, black chess masters. I heard about them. And then I got up in Minnesota, and they had three of them. You know, so I'm like, what? You know, I'm in heaven now. You know what I'm saying? That Bird, you know, Leonard Reynolds, you know, Bill. I'm like, man, they got chess masters up here. I ain't seen nothing like this. So I was having fun then. That's when I started really playing chess. You know, I came up here. I was an expert, so I was really playing chess hard, you know, to make my push. And, you know, it was just so refreshing up this way, a lot of opportunities for chess. Chess has been real great for me, you know. As far as finances, made a lot of money playing chess, flew a lot of places, stayed in a lot of hotels, you know. And, you know, up here in this area, it was all, you know, a guy named Jack. He really helped, you know, helped me out a lot, Jack Mannion. He's gone and passed to the other side, but he was a real help, he was.
All right, go ahead, Bert, tell us.
All right, elementary school, there's a school chess association, so started early, still in my head, just pictures of being these different tournaments in elementary school, and then wasn't until early, let's see, seventh grade that played my first rated tournament. Let's see, I got a started out with a rating of 1204, something like that. And just played in the Castle Chess Club, because it met downtown St. Paul back then. And that was nice. That was like a bus ride. But my parents would drop me off too, but I could I could bus there and back too. So that was my early experiences.
Yeah. Tyler?
Yeah, my experience was actually pretty similar. I played a lot of scholastic tournaments with that School Chess Association. I don't know if they're still around now. And then, you know, you get better just by playing better players, so I just kind of stuck with it. I started winning those tournaments. And then I transitioned also to the Chess Castle of Minnesota. And I still remember my first tournament. I think I lost like all five games. And I got whooped, and so it was really good motivation. And I just ended up playing those tournaments for many years. Kind of hit a plateau, didn't play for a long time, and then I said I need to get this title. So I returned in around like 2019, and I just played there and eventually got it.
Yeah, I would like to say that I'm gonna also join in. Let's see, Dad. How did I get into chess? help me out with that one.
Well, you know, we had like a chess program, chess master, grandmaster edition. Had all kind of, you know, little characters. Used to go over, walk over, well, slash her with a throw, you know. So used to play games, getting used to, had pieces around so you could play with the pieces, till you finally learned how to play the game. But mostly you got into elementary school and then started playing. Middle school, started playing. Could have been playing when you was two or three or four, been grandmaster by now. But, you know, they like playing video games more. You know what I'm saying? The chess, and then to get serious of chess and get in high school and then show talent. You know, that's when you were little.
So you could have been his first trainer then, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did put 80 hours in Street Fighter VI in the first 10 days. So the more things change, the more, yeah, you know, something like that. I used to play when I was younger, and because I remember there's like that picture of me when I'm like 2.5, 3 years old, and I'm playing like the Kali, which is still one of my favorite openings to play, you know, through transposition. But yeah, no, I remember playing a lot. The thing is, I also just, like, I never remember it feeling like a job, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it was always, like, fun to play chess. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, that's why I do it with my dad, and I do it with some of my friends, and you know, my dad was always trying to get me to go to tournaments, but it was so quiet and, like, and all that stuff. So I remember not going to that many tournaments. So, and I remember, like, my dad was saying in high school, I think my, like, senior year of high school, I jumped up, like, 700 points or something. Because then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to, like, four or five tournaments in a row. And then, like, I went from, like, 1,200 to, like, 1,900 in, like, one swoop. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. So, yeah, I just really love chess, too. So this question is going to be specifically for my dad and Bert. So you're talking about the tournaments and how the Fisher boom is, and recently we had the boom happen in chess again, where we saw a huge explosion with Nakamura getting really popular during the pandemic with Twitch and being one of the best number one Twitch streamers, and chess, like, trending over the most popular video games in the world. And then we also saw another boom where the Queen's Gambit came out and was this huge hit that everybody loved watching, and one of Netflix's best shows of all time, selling shows of all time. So now we're in another boom, chess boom here in the West, especially here in America. And how do you feel like this boom compares to the boom back in 72?
I could start.
Yeah.
the thing is that with the Fisher boom, it was enormous. It was across the board. It was through the papers, there were fewer, like, you had standard media, mm-hmm. like the newspapers, and everybody, you know, back then, there were only so many newspapers, so many news shows, and so it was enormous, and the impact was also political. I mean, it was a battle of East and West, of democracy versus, you know, the evil empire and all that. So the impression, I mean, the impact was enormous back then. I think now that with the media, and we're all, like, there's so many different channels and stuff, that, like, with Nakamura, he's having a great impact, and compared to other chess players, I mean, it's just enormous, like, making so much money. But the impact to the general population, it's not the same. It's very specific.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, in the Fisher boom, I was just getting started. It was big. Chess was big. Backgammon was big. Just playing board games in general was big, you know. And chess was on TV, and I was looking at the analysis, and all my life when I was little, I always wanted chess to be on TV, you know, wanted to see chess, study some chess. And now, there it is, it's on TV, it's on the internet, it's on my telephone, it's on my tablet, my laptop, you know, I got chess everywhere. So when I see it on TV, you know, I really, you know, like the video. So I think the boom today would be a greater boom because it eliminated illiteracy. You know, I didn't know nothing about chess. Now I can go online and study rook pawn in games and look at combinations and listen to the master talk strategy. Didn't have none of that back then. Was just on my own, you know. So now it's even more explosive as far as Nakamura streaming. Oh yeah, and he do a good job of teaching and coaching and, you know, telling us about chess, keeping us abreast. He say he a streamer first, you know. If he ever becomes world champion, he'll still be a streamer first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now currently the number two ranked player in the world in classical. So as he just won the Norway chess classic. Yeah, so I'm hearing this difference of like the effect that it had in the media and how everybody was talking about it and it was just everywhere in the general public versus how much easier and accessible a lot of the chess tools are here for people who are into chess now and being able to get better. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I wanted to add things,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, go ahead.
When I was junior high, that visit my grandparents on my mom's side in Alabama. And one day my grandfather, who didn't play chess, and he worked really hard. I mean, he was a beer delivery person. And I talked to him about chess, and he told me about how he watched on TV the Fischer-Spassky match. And he talked about it being in a great hall. And I was just like locked in. That was just kind of a moment for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, yes. Kyler, can you tell us what it feels like to live through this big boom? You know, I know my dad, you're what, 66?
67.
67? You just had a birthday. And Bert, you are?
Oh, 58.
58. And Kyler is?
26.
Yeah, so you.
Yeah, big age gap.
Big age gap. Yes, there are actually six black chess masters in the state, and Kyler is the youngest one by quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so, as someone that didn't actually get to experience that, like Fischer boom, like our generation was very far removed from that, how does this boom, like, how do you interpret this boom that happened?
Fischer was really influential for me as well.
Oh, okay. Tell us about that.
I think just because he was so dominant, and the U.S. hasn't really ever had a player like that since. Like when he's coming up through the candidates tournament to play for the world championship, like his 20-game win streak, because in my opinion, it's like one of the most dominant performances in competition ever. So I always really admired him as the ultimate like rebel, because he really did it all himself. And then, I mean, even my mom, who doesn't play chess, she'll read, like, Fischer biographies and things like that. So he was pretty influential. But, yeah, just with, like, the streaming, it was really surreal because I was big into, like, video games coming up through, like, the 2010s and stuff. So I was watching a lot of streamers for, like, different games. And then now that, like, chess has become, like, this big thing, it's pretty surreal. But I'm not actually sure if it's, like, actually – like increase the number of tournament players. I think there's a lot of like general interest, but one of the things about chess is like there's not like a standardized education, so I feel like a lot of people, they still don't know like how to improve, or like after they make the first steps, like where to go after.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we have a lot of increase in that type of content of how to get better at chess and stuff like that. I know back in the day my dad would have all the chess-based DVDs and have all the books and stuff like that. And, I mean, these are things that cost a lot of money and they're hard to access and stuff like that. Now I know, like, a lot of my study I do is just, like, just using chess-based the database or the Lee Chess database, or, you know, I'm just watching YouTube videos. Like, I'm like, yeah, this stuff is very high quality, you know, and a lot of it's free, too. So that's been really nice to enjoy, so...
Yeah, and then, you know, getting the libraries involved in chess and, you know, making them buy books and new in chess books and chess magazines, you know, that increased, because I didn't have all that. Them was the most expensive items, you know. We made the library buy them and they stored them and all kind of stuff. So there's a lot of chess books at the library, and
oh, yeah.
That was important. It wasn't like that when I was around. They had those old books, you know, that you have to read real hard. I learned from it, you know. But now it's just easier to teach somebody chess than to send them to the book first. To me, it's easier to talk them through the game, and they pick up the tips, and, you know, they learn that way. You know, I work at Juvenile, you know. As far as volunteering, it ain't really work, but I volunteer at Juvenile, and I go down there, and they love chess. It's the same thing in the elementary schools. When I teach school at the elementary school, these kids, they love chess. You know, they don't, when it comes to the game room, they want to play chess. They don't want to play tic-tac-toe or four-connect. They want to play chess. And chess is exciting to them. And some of them don't even know how the pieces move. But, you know, I don't, you know, dissuade them. I just let them play. Be exciting with them, you know, that excitement. Ooh, that's a good move, you know. In some other world, bam, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, we have fun with it and, you know, make chess fun and they learn and I teach them sit-ups and they know how to get through the sit-up and Bert Wilson can't beat them because they got a sit-up, you know. Kyler can't beat them because they got a sit-up. Even I can't take them out fast, and I'm the one that taught them to sit up. So, you know. So they play, and the game lasts a long time, and I point out tips. So, you know, I kind of teach while they playing, and they learn, and they remember. The only persons having real problems is kindergartners and first grades, but mostly by the time they get to second grade, they know how all the pieces move. So, you know, it's just a matter of learning early. I think that's how Bert and them, see, when I get to the school, most of them kids know how the pieces move. I don't know where they learn them, but I'm glad somebody taught them. You know what I'm saying? Because that's the hardest part, yes. You know, teaching them how the pieces move. As they get to be a teenager, then they kind of remember what I said. Oh, you said that with three, you know, they remember the points and they pick up the tips a little bit faster as they get bigger. But them little ones, they know how to play really good, and they know how to analyze and talk chess. You know, I always say, if you can't say it, you can't do it. You know, I always tell them that the plan dictates the moves. I always tell them that it's better to be safe than to be sorry. I teach them principles, you know, so while I'm coaching, I'm also talking about life.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I tell them that when you got the white pieces, you can make one, two, three, four. You might be able to make five, six mistakes, and you might not have to pay the ultimate price. I said, but when you black, I said, you already a move behind. I said, you make a mistake, you in trouble. You make a third mistake, white is all over you. You make a fourth mistake, you at the juvenile detention center. So, you know, I'll be talking to the kids. You can't just keep making mistakes. You got to have a plan. You know, they say, I'm going to be basketball. I say, do you see any basketballs around here? Nope, because you're making a lot of mistakes. And, you know, they listen and they adjust, and I try to teach them about the big picture. You know, when you have a plan, and the plan dictates the moves. So if you're planning on going to college, you're not going to be hanging out on the streets at 12 o'clock at night. Man. You know, and they listen and they learn. Now, you have experience that when they come to the library, after having seen me at school or at the juvenile detention center or somewhere teaching them in the community, don't they come up and tell you that I did a good job while I was there?
Well, the thing is, they don't, some of them do, yes, that's true. They come find me and they're like, oh, yeah, Don Hooker said that you were going to be up here and he taught me to set up and blah, blah, blah. And it literally sometimes I'll play people, they'd be like, oh, man, I'm bad at chess. You don't even know. I'm good. Like, you, I'm cool. And I play them and they start doing your little setup and I'm like, you know Don Hooker, don't you? They was like, how'd you know? And I was like, oh, Lord. You really be showing them all that setup. So, and I think that's a very important part here that we're talking about, too, is giving back to the community, right? Because me and my dad actually ran a chess club at North Regional Library for about 8 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, every Saturday we volunteered. And I remember going there for, like, the first time, 2007, 2008, and I was just, like, really confused. It's a Saturday morning. It's noon. I want to be at home playing my video game. And I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, and he's just setting up chessboards. And my dad says, well, we're giving back to the community. That's what we're doing. We have these gifts of playing chess, and we're pretty good at it. And so we're going to do what we can for our community and give back, and this is what we do. And we did that for 10 years, and I just love being able to do that and give back to the community in the heart of North Minneapolis. You know, I know a lot of folks are always trying to escape the hood or say like, "Oh, I want to get out of here" and stuff like that. You know, but like you know, that seems sometimes to be the problem. It's like they get all of these, like, tools and things from the hood, and then they leave with all their resources and things that the hood has given them, right? Where I like to, you know, because I feel like most things that we need to get done in our communities, we can provide for ourselves, you know, through mutual aid, you know, through helping others. So I think that's, like, very important to remember and being very intentional about our work, right? You know, doing it in a place where there is, you know, mostly African-Americans and a lot of other people of color, and teaching them chess specifically because, you know, we do lack a lot of diversity in chess, especially in African Americans. It's becoming bigger, like in China and India, through their chess in school program. But yeah, specifically with Black folks, I feel like we need to get more Black folks into chess.
There's a boom. Seems to be a boom going on in Nigeria, though, too. I'm just reading more about things that are going on there. So there's there are a lot of amazing minds in Nigeria, and if they get hooked into chess, there could be something going on there.
Yeah, and I love that. So I feel like in the African American community, we have a very rich history of chess, right? You see a lot of movies like Fresh or Life of a King, you know, where it's just a lot of, like, you know, Black folks in the park playing chess, like, you know, old school, you don't know nothing about that move, you know, that type of stuff, right? That type of energy. And so we have a rich culture of that. Why do y'all feel like we still struggle to get that that disconnect of getting African Americans in competitive chess?
Well, you know, in Kansas City, like I said, I learned most stuff by playing games, being good at games, so you get good at it. There's a lot of African American chess players. They're just all over the place. You know what I'm saying? You go to the club, they got chess boards, you play, you know, backgammon playing back then. Clubs had board games in there where they dancing and singing, but at the same time, there's some people over there playing chess for food or something, you know. It was always something like that in Kansas City. So we had chess clubs in the nightclub. They partying up there, but the chess was downstairs. The chess club go on at that time, you know. So in our community, we had a lot of Black players, and they played. There was some of them that played rated chess that was really good. You know, starting off, they played rated chess. That's how I got into rated chess. So there wasn't that many. I show up at a chess tournament. I'm the only one there, you know, as far as Black. I show up with somebody, then it's two Black there. We don't want to play each other. You know what I'm saying? Not right now. You know what I'm saying? Especially in the first or second round, we done drove a long way to get here. You know, we didn't plan each other right away. You know, so you know, I kind of think, you know, there's Black players, and they were strong Black players because we would hang together, you know what I'm saying, to make each other strong. That's why I said Zeb, Foreman, Herman, Key, Ross, all these people went on to become 2100, you know what I'm saying? They still strong. You know, they old now, but they still strong, you know, they don't play as much. So I think chess is just, it's just, like you say, they doing better now. With quicker time controls, game 30 was good. I used to like six games to game 30, you know what I'm saying? You know, so I think we're doing a lot. It all depends on the area because, like I said, in 95, it was three Black masters up here, you know what I'm saying? So they was playing blitz and they was doing stuff, you know. So they just had more up here than down there, but Kansas City had more players. You know, more Black players. I can just play anywhere I go, but they're probably just the people that I knew. So I don't know why they would be resistant to tournament play besides just, you know, not knowing about it. You know, not knowing about it, not starting early. Elementary, if you start early, if they got school, maybe we start better. But like I said, in Kansas City, we didn't have that. We had little high school tournaments. you know, after we got into it, started playing high school, and had a black coach, you know, teaching the stuff. But once I learned, I started teaching everybody. And then we started competing with the white schools, and we started, you know, winning some and competing against other masters. When you come to the chess club, they don't want to play you. You know how it is. They don't want to show you nothing until tournament play, you know. So yeah, we had fun in tournaments. In my area, we had Michael Brooks, you know, he was the IM. He had to make up his mind whether he was going to go to work or become a GM.
Yeah.
So he went to work because taking the next step was the big step. So, you know, I think black people play. It all depends on the area. Up here they was playing.
Yeah, I think that if you look at numbers, like a lot of people are casual chess players. And then to make the transition to beginning tournament play, that's kind of like a filter, and people drop off. It's like a pyramid, really. And so if you start with, you know, if we're a percentage of the population, you know, like if we're 10% of the population, then that it's just when you go through these transitions of going from informal play to beginning tournament play to sticking with tournament play and rising through the ranks, we've got fewer people on the on ramp, and so I think at the end we've got fewer people coming out. And I think also it's kind of a situation where you're already a minority, and then you go to a tournament, you're really a minority. And I think what happens there is that some people fall off, but then some people stay, and then they keep going. So we get these situations like in Minnesota where really if you made a graph that black players are doing, you know, I'm thinking when I was playing in tournaments, if I look around the room, that if there are a few black players, they're clearly above average and maybe a few standard deviations above average. So it's the ones that stuck with it. Mm-hmm. But there's a huge process of, and then of people falling off, like I said, with the pyramid. And I think another thing too is that as far as being a professional, that we, I think with education, that African Americans, we look, and it's so much work to go do well in high school and then college and so on, that we want to, if we're going to really apply ourselves, we want to get a job. It's just there's a certain, some people might disagree with me, but there's a certain pragmatism, and I can't say, oh, I'm going to be a professional chess player and maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, when I can go to college and mm-hmm. major in something that has a strong chance of getting a career and then, you know, being able to support family and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a few factors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to just like having someone to guide you through like competing in tournaments. So like in my case, if like some of the parents at my school hadn't have like gone out and found us like tournament circuits to play in, like I never would have gotten started. And then another point too is like when you transition to like playing, I guess, like adult tournaments or tournaments that are open, like it's really demoralizing to go through that and lose like every game. So I think if you have like a coach or someone that can kind of guide you through it and like show you how you're improving, that's like a big step in that process. And I think the way a lot of the, I guess, like the coaching and the way chess is taught, a lot of the resources are funneled more towards like the suburban schools. Mm. So like when I was playing like the school chess association tournaments, they were great tournaments, but they were all like clustered like out in the suburbs, like, and it just was like not very accessible, especially like in the Twin Cities.
Mm. Yeah. You know, like when I used to do the traveling on the national circuit, you know, like when you had success on the national level, I used to run into Maurice Ashley. You know, he was like the first black American grandmaster. But even at that time, I thought that Leonard Johnson was the highest rated African American. You know what I'm saying? He might have been first one to get the Grandmaster title, but I think Leonard Johnson was higher rated than him. Leonard Johnson came up with, you know, he was like a hypnotist. He had this one tape called Grandmaster Confidence. Man, this was world-class stuff back in 95. I don't know why he didn't make a fortune with that. You know what I'm saying? So I know that Leonard was really good, and he had a mind, and as far as his, you know, that technology that he came up with, that paralemmal psychology, where you're hearing that dual voice come through both ears. People still using that today. Paul Sheahy in the paraliminals still got headphones listening to that, you know, where you came with your critical mind, don't judge with the information, you know. That tape was good. He would be saying two voices in one ear. If you analyze them one, the other one is seeping into the subconscious. Mm. That was really good. That was better than a book. I don't know why they didn't go on to become. I don't know why he didn't do that. Even I still got his tape. I still got a CD. The last time that I saw him, I had to give him some CDs because he even lost his own stuff. You know, so, you know, he had an opportunity to be great. You know, he probably still great. I ain't seen him in a long time, but, you know, I know he was an important figure as far as, you know, chess in Minnesota goes. And as far as, like, Bobby Fischer was, like, you know, when the Russians would play Bobby Fischer, they said that they would play him harder. You know what I'm saying? They wouldn't give him no draws, but they drawing each other and winning positions, passing on. You know, sometime in a chess tournament, I felt like that, you know. All the white people was playing me hard. I'm here for 6 or 7 hours. Like, nobody wants to give up early on me or make a mistake on me. That was always my thing. You know, man, I'm going to be here a while. They're going to have to really beat me because I'm going to double down and start concentrating and focusing. You know what I mean? I'm committing myself. I'm doubling up on the focus, you know, because I guess we're going to be here. I played Vojay one game. 7 hours, winter time, couldn't hardly get home. Oh, I offered a draw, he rejected. I think I'm losing, you know. He offered a draw, I rejected. No, we're going to stay. And he still ended up winning, you know. So, you know, they play black people harder at chess tournaments, you know. They just do.
Yes. Before we move on to that topic, I do want to add just to get some context of Leonard Johnson. Leonard Johnson is one of the six African-American, six black chess masters in the state, and was the highest rated. And as far as I know, he's the only one to actually become state champion.
Yeah, he was co-champion one year.
Yeah.
And I think he was the highest rated player at one point.
Yeah, the highest rated player. Yeah. He just recently got inducted to the Chess Hall of Fame, and so I think he was a co-champion and won it outright one year.
I'm talking about the close that he was co-champion. Yeah, he won the Open, Open, probably a few times, several times.
Yes. So I just wanted to give that context of Leonard Johnson and who he is. Also, I want to say I agree with a lot of everything that y'all said. I also think a big factor is a lot of the funding, you know, and getting chess coaches to come over to the North Side or over to the, you know, these places that have predominantly black and indigenous and brown folks living in it. It's really hard, I mean, because the other schools have so much funding and so much more availability. I end up, because I've been coaching over at Edison for the last, 7 years? And, and the only way that I'm, you know, able to do it, because it's really hard, because out in the suburbs, they're paying their coaches out there anywhere from $80 to $100 an hour. And, you know, I'm not kidding, they do. And some of them don't even know what impasson is. The kids are teaching them. Oh yeah, it's bad. You're not always paying for what you get for. So we see stuff like that happening, and then, you know, and then I'm over in, you know, North Minneapolis and over Northeast, and they, you know, they say they've been giving me a raise, and like after 10 years I'm still making like $15, $16, you know. Like, you're paying for me my Uber there and back, you know, at this point. Like, so yeah, I think those disparities are really hard. You know, it's very hard to blame people to go coach out in the suburbs when they're making so much more money than they would in the inner suburbs, you know, in the inner city schools here. So I think that's definitely a big factor in all of that. You know, I've just been, you know, doing what my my dad has said, which he said, you know, it's very important to give back to the community. So I've made it a point that even though I can't be at Edison 4 to 5 days a week like I used to, like, I still go there once a week. You know, I'm going to be going to North this fall, in North Minneapolis. So, yeah, and I just think it's, you know, it's about that being intentional, that part about it. So yeah, I also wanted to talk about, like, you know, what type of racism do you feel like there's racism that you've experienced in the chess scene?
I have, but it's, some of it might have been due to being a lot younger than the opponents, but I have. There's been some microaggressions, and I still vividly remember one time where I beat a player. He stopped the clock and ran out of the room. I was like, wow, you know. And so, yeah, I've had racism, but it's not like a, no, I'm thinking of some blatant stuff too, but yeah, there's been some things though too. It didn't put me off. I think oddly enough, some of this stuff happening when I was a teenager, I kind of developed a side of me that it wouldn't throw me off, that it'll almost feed me, you know, somebody's going to have trouble, you know, if they're going to do something or say something. It kind of fired me up a little bit. It's like I let a side of me, you know, get excited about that. But I think on the other side, though, is that with Minnesota, that now with so much success of black players, like having a number of experts and masters, that when I've also seen this where the black player walks into a tournament, that people are assuming that this person knows something, that they're better than most. So there's been even a reverse, like, expectations that that a black player, they don't know the player. But I've seen this too, where I was playing speed chess with a guy. He was a little stronger than tournament, like the average tournament player. We were playing speed, we were friends and stuff, and just goofing around and stuff. And then the tournament director kind of looked over and he said, "Oh, you're playing, you know, speed chess with this guy. This must be serious. We can't, you know, I don't know if we can have him in the unrated section. This guy is, you know." And he was joking because I had known him for years. He was a mentor, one of my chess mentors too. So there was no racism involved in that. But what I'm saying is just that now that with so much success of black players in Minnesota, there's a bit of the reverse, like, almost like we're, you know, when a black player comes in, they're expected to be better.
I know, like, on the national level, you know, like I said, it all depends on where you at. Like I said, up in Minnesota's three masters, in Kansas City, we didn't have not one. But I know when I go to national tournaments, I show up with Minnesota and, you know, South High School or one of the elementary school, and we going to be challenging for the number one spot, you know what I'm saying? But then, well, I only got 4 or 5 of them, you know, but they good 4 or 5, you know. But then Detroit come down, and they got about 60 or 70, you know, and then they all black, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like, where are the white people from Detroit? Or they not playing any chess, or just the black people play chess? And because the black people play chess, the white people are not going to come and compete. Or I don't know what it was about that. That was strange, and it happened every year. But every year, those black kids would be challenging for the national title because it was a lot of them, you know what I'm saying? And they would get a lot of points, and it was always challenging. And, you know, I ain't calling it racism. I don't know why they was always coming down by themselves. you know, and nobody else from Detroit come down, you know. I don't know, understand that one. So, you know, I ain't calling that racism, or I ain't saying it's racism because they want to play me for 7 hours, or you know what I'm saying, or 6 hours. You know, it's hard to, you know, to find it. I can't find it in the pairings or nothing. I just would hate if I come a long way, because chess, I've talked to people about chess and they'd be surprised that I could talk about going to Kansas City for a chess tournament, or going to Oklahoma for a chess tournament. For a chess tournament, I'm going to Oklahoma. And they go look up there and go say Minnesota in the house. They go like, what? You know what I'm saying? It's like, I don't know. You know, sometimes, you know, with Trump doing his thing, it's just hard to go to those little towns. Like, I used to go to little towns. playing tournaments. I thought you would be the only ones there, you know.
Oh,
I ain't really seeing no racism or nothing, but, you know, I just would think twice about it today, you know, going to the real little towns.
Mm-hmm. Kyler?
I've definitely experienced, like, you know, comments and things like that, and I think a lot of people act really surprised when they find out that I play chess, actually. So it's kind of stuff like that that's really been the only, like, instances of, like, microaggressions and things like that that I've felt. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the way I look at chess, it's like, I mean, it's a 1v1 game. Like, it doesn't matter what your opponent believes at the end of the day. Like, the rules of chess are the same, and it's a fair game. So I never let things like that pit me off, and I've just kind of stuck to my own game, and I've kind of used chess as like a way of it's like self-developing and empowering myself, and I've used it in like different phases of my life and just different things that I've done. So that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah, I've experienced people saying a lot of comments in the chess world. I have a chess club now on every Sunday from 2 to 4 over at Torrey 44 called Black Kings Chess Club. Just as a way to create a safe space for, BIPOC people, and also queer folks, because there's a lot of misogyny and transphobic and homophobia going on in the chess community as well. I think it's important to create those spaces, but. I do agree with you. There is there's not many black folks that are playing competitively, but everyone is very strong. All the black folks are really strong. Like, most of them are masters or experts or A-class players, you know. They ain't playing around. Let's put it that way. And so I think that's fun. But also, like, I a lot of the time I never, like, really get to, like, play black players in tournaments. I played like 2 black players in tournaments. I played Will Murray one time in Duluth. Mm-hmm. That was so bizarre. And I think the most bizarre one was the Minnesota Open, probably like 6 or 7 years ago. I played Dr. Oki, who's a chess master from Duluth. And I played him on the first board. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, everyone looking, and like, everyone's like, just like, are they 2 black people on the first board for like the Minnesota Open? And I was just like, I know, right? This is like really weird. And like, everyone just like kept coming and staring, and like, it was like a circus or something. I was like, this is really weird. I was like, okay, I know we're on the board 1, but, you know, I feel like we're attracting more players than usual, but like, it's fine.
There weren't any protest signs or anything. Black players matter.
No. I haven't brought any protest signs yet. you got to keep them on their toes, though. One thing I want to talk about is Bert, you said you were 58,
mm-hmm.
and my dad is 67. And a lot of the other there's six black chess masters in the state, and a lot of them are averaging around 55 plus.
Mm.
And so Kyler's the only one that's actually, you know, like, under the age of 55, and he's 26. So, why do we think that there's this huge gap between like all of the black chess players and their age?
I'd say it's partly the Fisher boom.
The Fisher boom?
Hmm. I think if there's any, that's the big thing right there. I think it's just the generation, like my generation and a little bit before and a little bit after were affected by the Fisher boom.
Okay.
Yeah.
That?
Yeah, well, it just, like you said, it's a financial burden and it's hard to get people to show up. You know, we start a chess club, they drop the kids off and they leave. You know, no, that ain't right. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You're supposed to be there with the kids, studying chess, learning chess too, trying to get better. You know, they think the chess club is a spot for the babysitter, you know. So sometimes that works. I'll come back and get you and they learn that way, but it's better if the parent can be there with them. You know, I like the ones where the parents play too and the kids play and you know.
Yeah. And that's nice if you can, like, afford and you're not working a job or two, you know. But like, you know, a lot of the suburbs that, like, you work at, most of the time they're just dropping their kid off and then you just teach them and you send them back, you know, recently when you've been working in the suburbs. So that I would disagree that that's, like, the primary reason. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm talking about sometimes on Saturday. I ain't talking about the organized, you know, chess schools or clubs like that, mm-hmm. captive audiences. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about sometimes, you know, I'm doing the library and they just drop people off and they leave and come back, you know. Kids being to learn something, you know, I've been to taught them something by then, but I just like it better when there's parent involvement.
Okay. Kyle?
I'm not really sure if I, like, really know the reason why, but I think the thing that always surprised me is, like, I took a pretty big break from playing chess for about 4 years, and during that time, like, when I came back to Minnesota, I always, like, assumed, like, someone would just, like, come after me, or, like some new player would develop, and then, like, that would be that, but, yeah, I'm not really sure about the age gap.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like, yeah, something's going on, like, besides the Fisher boom. Like, people are somehow, like, being filtered out, but I'm not quite sure the reason why.
Yeah. I feel like we got the, as people who, you know, as African-Americans who are strong at chess, like, I feel like we got to be real intentional and going in our communities and doing what we best can to give back. You know, my dad is a multi-national winning champion, you know, coach. He's coached several national champion teams and players. And so I think we got to, you know, focus on doing that more collectively as a community.
And, you know, also it's like giving back to the community pays from sometimes. You know, people would always ask me, how do you start a chess program and get paid? How'd you do that? I said, well, you know, because they want money so they could start the chess program, you know. But I try to tell them that before people give you money, you first got to get a program up and running. You know what I mean? It's the opposite. You think you need the money to get it up and running. But no. You need to be invested in it, and you need to get it up and running. And then once you get it up and running, somebody see it up and running, then they'll be willing to finance to keep it going for you. So I had a lot of chess clubs like that. DJ be thinking I'm giving back, but I'm getting paid, you know, at the same time. You know what I'm saying? Even now, there's sometimes I get paid $80. And then there's some days I'm getting paid $120. It all depends on how many kids I got. So I'll be trying to tell the kid, you see here, I'm getting paid the big bucks here. You know what I'm saying? If you learn it right now, you could be getting paid the big bucks.
All right. Well, I really just appreciate y'all coming on to the show. I think it's very important to highlight how many African American chess masters we do have in the state. We do have six. That is a lot in one state. It has been nice being able to talk to y'all three and just want to archive all this history, right? Because we've had historical, like, black chess players that were, like, indentured servants, like Thompson. And, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like he was one of the leading promise. He made chess tactics. He was one of the leading chess tactics players in the world and still really good. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's this one black chess player. And it's like, no, it was he was playing with other folks. We just lost that information, right? Mm-hmm. And so being able to archive this information and being able to actually archive it and be able to come back and listen to it, I think that's really important. With that being said, we are out of here. Thank you so much.
Thank you.